You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
What's up? I see those horns.
Horns thrown. Welcome to a new episode of Stuck at Home with me, Cliff Dorfman, and this guy. New song. This guy next to me.
We got a new song. This is Jason coming. Jason Smith coming in on the threes and fours.
That's my kind of music.
Yeah, there we go. Right, we decided to update ourselves a little bit. Love the quarantine, love the music, but we decided it was time to do a little custom Cliff and Jason music. By the way, I am Jason. I'm here. I am the deliverer of said music, not the creator of said music. That was a really great guy named Kyle McGraw. And welcome to Stuck at Home, your show where we go over all the different shows we love and want you to love.
Yep, we'll tell you all about the streaming wars, what to stream, and where to stream it.
And as a bonus today, and hi, Nancy. It's so good to see you. We're glad to see you, too.
Nancy.
And then on top of it today, what we're going to be doing a little bit, we got an interview scheduled, and hopefully everything's good. We're just waiting on our guests to arrive. But we're going to be take the second half of this show on the Stereo app, which is a new app out there on the phones. And it's a very easy one to download. We're going to stay on here so you can hear us and you don't have to leave. But it's definitely something that we've been doing a little more of. There's a lot of fun question and answer stuff we get to do there. We got new fans over there and they ask questions. You guys can join in. It's a lot more of a collaborative show on that side. And that's how we're going to do the news today and see how it works.
Yeah. And you can stay here, right?
And watch stay here and listen. You won't be able to comment. You could comment with the text like you always do, but if you want to leave a voicemail message, you'll need to leave it on the Stereo app. It's really easy to do. If you have a chance to download it before we get going, you should get going on it. So we have a really cool guest today. He was actually one of the last comics that I saw before.
In the before time.
In the before times, which I call everything. I call everything the before times. I call the way my wife dresses now since after quarantine. I'd ask her, do you remember what your pants look like in the before times?
The before times. That's what it was. That's what it is. That's why we changed the music. Listen, if you're not banging your head right now, you know, we're all banging our head a little. And that's okay. That's okay. But the before times, he was literally the last comedian you saw.
He's literally the last comedian I saw before the before times, Michael Costa, who also happens to be a pretty damn good tennis player.
He was ranked 848 in the ATP. Right. I think as an overall singles player, he played University of Illinois and I believe he was a coach, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, this guy is he's diverse, yet, you know, tennis, stand up. He's a one on one guy. He's a correspondent. He wants to take it right to you.
He's a man's man. Did you play any tennis? Did you ever play any tennis?
Yeah, I'm from Long Island.
You're from Long Island. So no.
No, a Jew from Long Island. Yes, of course.
I don't know what that means. Like, I don't know if that means you play soccer.
Let me tell you. Jew sports, baseball.
Yeah, I don't know the stereotypes. I don't know tennis stereotypes. Tell me.
So Little League, for sure, you did baseball. Then you have a big contingency of Jewish kids and Jewish adults, unfortunately, who all think they can ball. Mm-hmm. They all think they can play basketball. And some of them are good. But, you know, let's just be fair. When was the last Jewish guy you saw in the NBA?
I don't know. I can't think of the last one.
So to every Jewish guy that I've ever known in my life, dude, you can't really ball. I mean, now, I just accept that I can't ball at all. And you played a little league. You did tennis. Because, you know, it's like one-on-one. You get to dress nice. You can play any day. You can take the Sabbath off. And on top of it, you know, there's an indoor tennis thing. And then that's a natural progression to racquetball.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That makes sense. And, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I want to make an apology to Dolph Skolics and Art Heyman and Rudy LaRusso and Nat Aussie Schlechtman and Barney Sebran and Bernard Hopper and Bobby Rosenfeld and Sidney Heisberg.
Are these all the Jews in the NBA?
And Ralph Kapolowitz. These are all the Jews that I can find that play basketball. None of them from this, like, this.
None of them this century.
No, not at all.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is, and by the way, it's okay.
Yeah. Leo Gottlieb and Eddie Gottlieb. I'm also sorry to you guys, Oli Volchok. You know who is Jewish? David Stern, head of the NBA.
I mean, and this is why people are upset with us.
So we play
tennis, but we don't see us at Wimbledon. I think where you see us is in baseball. That's where we're like Jews Andy can excel. Colback. Yeah, you know, you always get a random here and there, but literally, we excel in baseball, and you know, in tennis, it's good because we can play it. It's social. Oh, in golf. Golf is another one.
Oh, yeah.
Again, well, we're not in the PGA, but golf. If I'm going to look
at any sort of stereotype in that sector, and not that it's a stereotype, I look at, like, you know, it's the doubles match at the country club, right?
Yeah.
Right. The parents that play tennis. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
but the Marty really Goldberg who plays tennis. Yeah,
it's mixed doubles, but it's a metaphor for their marriage.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. All of it comes out on the court. And then there's like the boy, and then there's like the daughter who goes to the pool. Like, there, it's a Caddyshack movie. Like, that's where the way I see it. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and you know, what else is a Jewish sport? Is bridge.
Mm.
Bridge. If poker's a sport, then bridge is a sport.
That's 100%. Like, I just read about this the other day. There was a mass bridge cheating scandal that went on. And like, they were just coughing, no money. It was just for
kid was based
for
on
winning, but there was like an elaborate coughing, scheme that was done just to win the championship. No money again, would have changed hands just for the trophy. No,
this is a coughing scheme.
Yeah. They had a series of different coughs so that they could figure out how to cheat each other. Yeah. Crazy, right?
That just gives you a real insight into the demographic and the age of a bridge player.
Right. Like,
where coughing all the time through a match is acceptable and normal, you're old. You're old. So should we start talking about stuff and then, you know?
Yeah, it looks like he's got about he's gonna be about 10 minutes late. He'll be here in about 10 minutes, so we'll just let's talk about some things in the meantime. Yeah.
Let's start talking about some stuff because we always run out of time anyway. You know what we could start with if you want? And then I'm open, by the way, because I love how you structure things. But we definitely have Mank to talk about.
Right. Well, let's talk some Mank. What's up, Mank?
You want to talk
about Mank? That's not that kind of Mank, right? That's not Mank. What's up, Mank?
Mank.
What's up, Mank?
Mankiewicz. Yeah. Mank.
To be fair, Mank was one of my top three ska bands. I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Oh, wow. That would have not been a bad name.
I know, right?
I mean, listen, you know, by the way,
Mank and Pickle.
No Doubt was a ska band.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think at some point, Gwen Stefani owned a juicery in Orange County with her parents before she got famous.
Now, you know that trivia, but you don't know the names of any Jewish basketball players. Because
there are none.
That's right.
I mean, you know, to know those names would be like to understand, you know, to remember all the names of the Rebbes.
Yeah, I mean,
the Bible. I don't know either.
You don't know Sue Bird or Barney Sedran, Ralph Koplitz.
We're starting this. You know where I wouldn't be surprised if there was a couple of Jews is hockey.
Oh yeah, I'm sure there are. You know, actually, there's a few female basketball players that are Jewish.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. They can be Jewish women, very domineering.
Very,
they're hitting the paint.
They go hard in the paint.
Yeah, you know? They're hard in the paint. They're on the backboards.
Yeah, they're on the backboards. They go hard in the paint. All right, so talk to me about Mank. Let's talk about Mank.
Okay, so
before you get into what you thought about it, tell everybody what Mank is.
Okay, so Mank is David Fincher's newest movie with Gary Oldman and a cast of a lot of people. And on top of it, it is his father's screenplay that, I don't know if his father's alive or dead. I hope he's alive. But his father's screenplay that he wrote, and he had it for years, like it was his passion project. And now his son gets to bring it to fruition and make it.
David's dad was a director also, or just a writer?
As far as I know, he's a writer.
Okay,
but you know, we don't do the look it up thing, but look it up.
Yeah.
so it's about, and what he wrote was about the goings on during the development and making an aftermath of Citizen Kane. The true story of what Mankiewicz, the screenwriter who wrote Citizen Kane, who actually has, you know, ended up having to fight to get his name on. He was a washed up alcoholic, you know, this guy for all intents and purposes, and he never really had a huge movie. And then he wrote this masterpiece based on, as you find out, his true experiences with William Randolph Hearst, W.R., and his showgirl wife, you know, girlfriend, wife, who, you know, who the girl in Citizen Kane is based on. And I mean, again, you know, I don't read reviews. I've heard things. I've seen some things online. I think I'm in the minority, but let me tell you, man, I think this thing is fantastic. I mean, there's some spots where it dips. I should only make a movie that dips like this. But that being said, I believe that, and I'm not sure if people pick this up or not, or if it's just something I'm seeing and I'm totally off, but I feel like Fincher and his dad and this whole team and Gary Oldman is, you know, I mean, this guy, it's like he's Daniel Day-Lewis. You know, the two of them are, he can do anything. He's just, the accents, the voice, the tone, the shoes, the clothes, his hair, and he's a freaking shapeshifter on top of it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he is.
You know, this guy's getting another Oscar, another Golden Globe. He's getting nominated across the board. That being said, what I believe Fincher and his dad did here that is so fantastic is they found a way to, like, remake Citizen Kane.
How do you mean?
Well, instead of watching Citizen Kane, what you're watching is the real Citizen Kane. So in other words, what you're really watching is Mankiewicz's relationship with William Randolph Hearst and how he was the court jester at William. He was best friends with W.R. and the showgirl and her cousin. And he was very close. He was always at the estate at the Hearst mansion. He was there all the time. It was like William Randolph would be like his girlfriend, the Marion, the showgirl, and then William, and then Mankiewicz. And Mankiewicz would, you know, he was drunk all the time. He was a way over the top alcoholic. And, you know, he was literally the court jester.
It's interesting when you talk about that kind of stuff. It just, it gives me immediate allusions to like F. Scott Fitzgerald and, you know, The Great Gatsby and kind of that relationship. It seems like this was a very true kind of concept and a way to get your story made was to have like a buddy, just like a third wheel that's a writer, and that likes your girlfriend, right? Like if you,
well, but you're not wrong. But this was also, you know, you're dealing with the change into talkies, you know. Mm-hmm. So you're just, you know, you're in the 30s, so we're post depression. You know, when FDR and the New Deal, and you know, this is the backdrop of everything. Remember, at this backdrop, Hollywood's still Republican. You got Louis B. Mayer and MGM, and you have Mankiewicz's problem with them and all his fights with all of them. And why I say it's like remaking Citizen Kane, let me be clear, is that what we see in Citizen Kane is this really brilliant, haunting depiction of this mogul and his very young girlfriend and this tragic love story of this guy, you know, basically never knowing real love. And the one thing he wanted when his deathbed is his sled, you know. Right. So it was the only time he was ever happy, basically. And it's this haunting, lonely indictment of a dude. But, and what we know in history is that there was a lot of fallout. They shelved the picture. RKO was sued. It was a big hullabaloo. That being said, what we didn't know is why Orson Welles had it in so much for William Randolph Hearst. Mm-hmm. And it turns out it really wasn't him. And you really find out what happened, what the schism was between Mank and W.R. and the showgirl. And that really gives you a sort of brand new way to watch Citizen Kane.
I like it because the old way is kind of boring these days. I enjoyed it one time. I had to watch it. I'm going to take a hard right turn right now back into the world of stand-up comedy and tennis.
Really? Okay, so we got Mike
just showed up. He just got done with this thing, and it's 3:45, so I want to get him on here and going because I want to be mindful of his time. But I'm really excited to talk to him. Like we were talking before, he was the last stand-up I saw before in the before times, and it's good to see his face again.
Okay, so let's do a little introduction. So he is a correspondent on the ever so popular The Daily Show. I mean, if you don't know that, I'm not sure where you are. He's got his new stand-up special on Comedy Central, December 11th, coming out. And he's got his podcast, Tennis Anyone, available everywhere you buy, listen, rent, podcast. Yeah,
and if you're buying podcasts, let me know where you're buying them from, because I got a few to sell you.
Patreon. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Costa.
Yeah, let's see if I can get my mouse to work. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Michael Costa. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, thanks for having me. Sorry for my delay.
Oh, that's fine. Don't worry. And, nice to see you.
It's funny. I actually, in a different discussion today, I said Rosebud. And I don't even know if I said it the way it's, you know, I kind of said it as if I'm an intellectual, but what am I referring to? Innocence? Is that what he's trying to get back to? Is that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, though, if you watch, you haven't seen Mank, apparently, because Mank, one thing that's alluded to that I thought was kind of genius was that it was Marion's vagina.
Oh, okay.
Was the nickname for her vagina. So, you know, that would be interesting.
Yeah. And really,
I'm going to go with innocence, though.
No, but I like that
really
too.
Every conversation you've ever had, but only if you've seen that movie.
Doesn't it?
I mean, you know, I feel like it is always about sex or reproduction. When I was listening to Serial, the first season, and they're like, did he do it? Did he didn't do it? What were they doing in the Best Buy parking lot? And I'm like, they're having sex, everybody. It was sex.
It's always sex.
Sex is always the answer. So I was just like screaming at the radio, and that's in Serial. That's where I bought my podcast. But
you were listening.
I was listening, but I, yeah. Anyway, so I'm happy that I knew to say Rosebud, but now I have a better idea of what it is. Thank you for having me. And, it's nice to be, it's nice to see other people and like try to pretend like we're connecting in real life. So thank you.
We are connecting, Michael Costa, and welcome to the show. And are you in LA?
I'm in Brooklyn. I'm in
which
Brooklyn.
Part?
Bed-Stuy, you know, tall white guy who plays tennis.
Yeah, when I was Bed-Stuy, growing up, you couldn't walk in. Bed-Stuy was a whole...
Yes.
If you're going to a factory or something, you can go there, you know, but you are not really looking to go there.
It's pretty wild seeing the changes and trying to be someone that isn't being out of touch and unaware of the changes. The money, man, the money in this city is out of control. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens to New York after all of this, if there is an after. Maybe this is it from now on. I don't know.
This is the new normal. By the way, before I go any further, is that a portrait of you behind you?
I'm not even sure what you're talking about. What exactly is it that... that is me.
Yeah, look at that.
It's self-aware. I'm aware. My favorite is when people don't mention it.
Oh, no,
because then they're like, oh shit, they think that I just have this up.
Oh, yeah, they think you're like Patrick Bateman.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, yeah, no, shh, don't upset.
This was made for me for a pilot that failed miserably, and I loved it. And it's up as a nice reminder. One, good job to the artist. Like, you did a nice job. But also, two, this is a silly business. Take it, be silly, be self-aware, and hang your own face on the wall.
Amen to that. So I want to jump back to this thing that you did called tennis.
Sure.
So you were, you know, for instance, you went to University of Illinois.
That's right.
And you had a scholarship there?
That's right. Yep.
And all you did was play tennis.
Yeah, I played tennis and occasionally studied. I started a business major and then quickly moved to communications. And still don't know what you do with a speech communication degree. I guess I'm doing it.
You're doing you are. Yes.
But yeah, it was a full-time job. And also we were good. We were the number one team in the country for 2 years.
Top 10 tennis
team. Yeah. We were very, very good. And,
number one,
it was treated as a full, it was, I love that, you know, that it was treated as a full-time job. And you know, the NCAA says you only get 40 hours a week to work on it, but everyone knows that your coaches don't really adhere to that.
Yeah. 40 hours a week to work on it. My ass.
Yeah.
And you went from, so you were, I think I said, just like 848, somewhere in the top 900 of all the singles, right?
Yeah.
That's amazing. So what happens? Where do you, I mean, by the way, congratulations.
Thank you.
I don't know that I've been top 900 of anything in my life ever. So that it's a sick accomplishment. So what happened? So because tennis to stand up to me and tennis to being a correspondent to me, it all seems very similar. You're in people's faces. You're serving right at them. You're going out to get them. And you're on the court one-on-one, right? Pretty much. It's you and you're going to win or lose.
I think you nailed it. And no one ever nails it. Everyone always goes, how did you go from tennis to comedy? And I'm like, you're all by yourself. You're trying to defeat something or someone. If you make an ass of yourself, everyone sees it. They're very similar. The biggest difference is that in comedy, you can sleep pretty much as late as you want.
Tennis, you got to get your ass up.
Tennis, you better get up. You better be practicing. So yeah. I like people. I like working together. I like collaborating. But I guess as I'm looking at my life right now, I want to be the lead dog. I want to try to solve this riddle on my own. Doesn't mean I solve it. If anything, when you fail as an individual sport, it hurts even more because you can't pass the ball to somebody else. But stand up, you're alone, man. You're isolated. And if you have a great set, man, you do feel like a god. And if you have a bad set, they have fully and entirely rejected you.
Yeah, there's no, it's not like take it as a group. You definitely take it personal.
Hey, when Steve made that choice in the scene, it really screwed things up. No, you made the choice and you screwed it up.
Yeah, you basically sucked is what we're all saying.
You sucked. And there's a reason, you know, why do we sweat when we bomb on stage? Because our body actually is going into flight mode. Get me out of here. Let me leave. This is not a safe environment. So I always know I'm bombing. I mean, I can always feel when I'm bombing, but I really know I'm bombing when I look down and it's just the sweat. And I go, oh God, here we go.
I get that. That happens to me every time I try and do swing dancing lessons with my wife. That same sweat, never any other time. I must be terrified of swing dancing and I didn't even know.
You and your wife did a lot of stuff before in the times.
It's definitely triggering something in you, swing dance. Probably, yo, why do I keep saying yes to this terrible
That's
idea?
It. I don't know what the Lindy Hop is. I've learned it 20 times. I still don't know.
Yeah, it was ironic in swingers, Jason. It was irony. That's what I'm saying. So we know you do this, right? So you decide, all right, I'm going to go now and I'm not going to do tennis anymore, but you become a coach, correct?
That's right. Yeah, I was offered the assistant coaching position at University of Michigan men's team. Yeah.
And so how long did you stay there for?
I was there for 2 years and that's really the reason I got into comedy, because for once in my life, I was now stationed in a singular spot. You know, when you're playing tennis, it's just every week, you know, you play 45, 46 weeks a year. You're somewhere new. You're somewhere new. You're somewhere new. So now I'm stationed in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Ann Arbor is this awesome little college town, like a Madison or a Berkeley, where they appreciate the arts. They fund the arts. They support the arts. And there was an open mic every night. You know, I lived downtown and I would coach tennis and then I would go, this is terrible, but it's paying the bills right now. So I'll have a couple beers. I'll write some jokes down and I would go watch open mics. And all of a sudden I was stationed in a place and I signed up for some open mics. And here's the best part about stand-up comedy. You don't have to be good to start. You can just start. You have to have guts. Right. And in my case, guts was like 4 founders IPAs. And then you go perform after that.
I can do this.
I can. I am funny. I didn't think I was before I ordered these 4 drinks, but now I know I am.
Right. How do you not find me funny? Yeah. But did you bomb your first time? Do you remember? Or did you coach?
I did. Okay. I definitely remember because it's such a memorable moment in your life, especially as you continue to do comedy. I didn't bomb. I didn't blow the place away. But I felt something. And what I felt was, this is fun. I like this. A lot of decisions in my past started to make sense when I realized, oh, I was just searching for this kind of unbridled attention. And I hate to admit that because it sounds like so lame. But I actually became a more pleasant person to be around once I started to go on stage, because I was getting my fix at this location. I didn't have to be the annoying guy at the wedding.
Yeah, I hear this with a lot of my friends who are stand-ups too. It's a, you know, it's the reason they're able to function during the day. It's like, this, you know, you're exercising all these demons every night and you get to move on. And then
you get to move on. And for some people, it's taking a jog. For some people, it's, you know, hitting some heroin. For others, it's stand-up comedy. And I think it's a pretty fine one as far as health is concerned. It's okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go with heroin and stand-up are probably the best mix. But what's interesting, I ask a lot of stand-ups is this, is you had your first time. You didn't bomb. You didn't kill it, right? But you still felt that thing. And this is the differentiation that I ask, right? Okay, stand-up. It's one of two things that happens. You either get the high from the kill, and that's what you're chasing, or you're just getting it from the set, whether you bomb or you kill. You seem like, are you in that way? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really, it was many years later until I actually felt like I killed. It just, you know, they say you don't pick it, it picks you. And all of a sudden, every teacher evaluation in elementary school said, Michael is really funny, but he always disrupts us. Or if I was gone for a day and then I would come back, they would say, we got so much done yesterday. All of a sudden, all these things in my life where I'm at the dinner table with my three older siblings and I cannot get a word in. I cannot get a word in. I'm fighting and I'm trying to get mom and dad to look at me just for a quick second. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I perform stand-up comedy and it just fulfilled all of those voids. And we're talking a 4-minute set. I got all of that in 4 minutes. So it is powerful. I mean, it is powerful. And there's also people that perform and say, I'm never doing this again. And that's okay too. Good. Go. We don't need more competition. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
Let the stage be. It's fine.
Yeah.
So this is now, you know, you're getting to do something on The Daily Show, which for all intents and purposes, is one of the biggest shows around. And you're full-on correspondent. You get to go and travel, right? You get to do all these fun things and you're a part of the conversation. So tell me how this comes about and tell me what the dream is like, because I know it's got to be like kind of a dream come true.
For sure, it's a dream come true.
I mean, special after that.
Oh, that's okay. No, this is fun to talk about this stuff. I mean, you know, people ask me all the time, what's next? And I go, well, in my dreams, I didn't get after this. You know, I'm good. I was laying on the ground at my home in Michigan, watching Craig Kilborn's Daily Show, laughing at Craig Kilborn hosting the Daily Show and thinking, what is it like in that writer's room? What is a writer's room? How could I even get on this thing? So, you know, I feel privileged. I feel honored. It's been 15 years of stand-up comedy. I don't feel like it was handed to me easily, but I love being, I call it comedy PhD. You know, I am around constantly, people funnier and smarter than me. And it just feels like this wave of learning. So an audition, a position opened up. The audition came across my email through my agent. And, you know, in stand-up, lots of times you're performing these gigs and you're going, what is all this for? It's 11 people. I made $32. I bought dinner, so I really only made $8. But through the process of this, I developed some material that was poignant to our society. And then all of a sudden, The Daily Show says, hey, write an original piece in the voice of yourself criticizing or critiquing society. And I go, oh my God, that's what I do every single night. So I kind of pulled, I kind of pulled some of my own material that was about the world and used it for an audition. And all of a sudden I got their attention and got booked. And I'm glad I went and did those crappy shows in Silver Lake in the basement where, you know, everybody hates you.
They all fucking helped, right?
They all helped. Everything helps. And this is every profession. You're sitting here going, what am I doing? It is helping you. It doesn't always feel like it, but it is.
Yeah. Again, you're sitting, like you said, it wasn't fun from what it sounded like coaching tennis. You're like, this sucks. You didn't seem to like it too much yet. Yeah. You were getting something from it.
If I was getting some. Go ahead. Yeah. No, I was getting, you know, at that point I was getting healthcare from it. But I remember thinking I made $28,500 coaching at Michigan. And the head coach said to me, hey, if you work these camps, we'll give you an extra $4,000. Now, so I said, okay, sure, $4,000. The camps were like 16-hour days, you know, all July in the sun. And I remember thinking, $32,000 a year, I think I could be a poor comic. Now, my first year in comedy, I think I made, you know, $4,200, you know, nothing.
Right, right.
But I was said, if I'm going to be poor, let me be poor and do something I am passionate about.
And now we get to, hi, Jason. Okay, you're good. Okay. We got something?
Oh, no. I was going to just talk. The first time I saw you, Michael, perform was at Clusterfest.
Oh, cool.
A couple years ago. And it was during the day. which I think is a weird time for comedy. Like when it's light outside, it was outside. Yeah. It was outside, and the way they had everything set up was they had these VIP seats in the front, and nobody that's VIP is showing up for daytime comedy. So it's completely empty, and everybody is actually having to stand about 20 or 30 feet back from the stage, behind the barriers for the regulars. So they basically set up a comedy stage where you could have no audience except people like 20 feet away from you. We were lucky enough to have seats, so
it was a COVID-19 show before that even existed.
But I'm just telling you, like you kept people's attention in the light times, like in the daytimes, and it was just such a really funny, like compelling thing. My wife, she's not a stand-up person, but we sat there and we watched, and we were like, maybe we'll get food, and then she sat, and we're watching this, and I just really remember that you came out like it was like finally like somebody our age talking about our stuff. So I really enjoyed it.
I really appreciate that. And, you know, I remember that show. I remember all shows. And
do you remember every show you've done?
I remember every show. I mean, I can't, you know, I know if I can tell you every joke I did, but I remember that show. And I remember the sun going down. I remember looking at my watch when I think Ronnie Chang was on before me. Yep. And I remember thinking, if he could go long, it might be dark. It might be dark by the time I get on, but it wasn't. It was bright. Yeah.
I think that I've only seen a couple of people that can pull it off, but stand-up comedy in the light of day is such a weird place to have it.
You're right.
Yeah. If you like someone during the daytime, that's when you know you're dating.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's absolutely right. Yeah.
Okay. So you waited now. So you waited a while, I have to say, doing all this, doing the Daily Show. Now, finally, this is your first hour special for Comedy Central for anyone, really.
That's right.
So how are you feeling?
I feel great. I mean, I like how you use the word waiting as if I haven't been asking for it.
No, but, you've been waiting.
That's a great way.
Biding your time.
Yeah. I've been, you know, happy to be a stand-up comic who hits the road and does the Giggle Garage and does the, you know, whatever those silly street, having the Ha Ha Cafe. I like that. I think they're fun. So, but I will say this, when the opportunity came along to do an hour, I was very happy to showcase that. And,
you need to tell your agent to stop booking you at like children's gymnasiums. I think you do a lot better.
There are some rough ones. Hey, and one of the nicest parts of having a TV job is you can say no to some stuff.
No is powerful, right?
No is powerful. And it's also just something that I was like, oh, this feels really good to say no to this. But there are times when you can't say no and that's okay too. So,
So when did you film this? This is Detroit, New York, and LA.
Three places.
Yeah. Three different cities. I wanted to take the viewer, not just to this theater, you know, not just the, oh my God, it's his special. He's just standing in this beautiful theater for an hour. I wanted to show people, hey, we're going to do some of that. We're going to do a beautiful theater in downtown Detroit, my hometown. It feels like a home game. You know, everybody's there to support me. But then within 10 minutes, I'm on a bicycle in the middle of Manhattan. It's freezing. We're going to a basement comedy club, the New York Comedy Club. It is gritty. It is raw. It is dark. It is intimate. And I want to show people what comedy is like usually.
Right.
Yeah. And then from there, we moved to Los Angeles to the Hollywood Improv off of Melrose. I came up with the idea because it's my path. I started in the Midwest. Then I went to the coasts and I bounced around. And also, I know how you watch TV now. You watch with the screen in this hand and a laptop in this hand and looking at the TV. I'm trying really just to get people to keep their fucking eyes on the TV. Oh, shit. Did they go to New York? How did I miss that? So
what happened? Those are bricks now. That's the improv. What's going on?
Yeah. So
we better pay attention.
But it's also a statement on every audience is different. Every city is different. Performing in all of them takes a skill set, but also a good joke is a good joke is a good joke. People will laugh at a funny joke. Doesn't matter where you are.
Amen. And by the way, you're doing that every day with your podcast, which, you know, he's staying in brand, Jason. Tennis, anyone.
Hey, I want to get the most passionate 64 listeners a week that I can get. So I focused on men's, more or less men's, professional tennis. And I, you know, look, this week's Tennis Anyone podcast, there's not a lot of going on in the tennis world. So I talked about vaccines for 15 minutes. So, you know.
But listen, isn't tennis a metaphor for so many things?
Yeah, exactly. You know, if it's kind of what I'm passionate about. And man, I know you know this, quarantine, you got to create stuff. It's the only thing that makes me happy is creating something.
Yeah, Jason and I mean, that's where this show really stemmed from. When we started this journey, it was not this. And the quarantine built this. And thank God. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was just going to say tennis built this. My dad plays tennis. That's how he got it. That's how he met his wife. He was the tennis coach. He was the man meet. Like that. Oh, that was God. Another
he's,
way.
He's putting his hands on her hips, telling her how to move.
I don't know if he's listening right now, but like my dad, like that was the other way you could have gone, Michael. You could have gone with the, I'm just going to instruct the ladies and then marry into like, you know, now he has a ranch with llamas. That was off the table before. He's a poor Mexican boy from Martinez. And then he got into tennis and, you know.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. When I moved to LA, I wanted really hard to not teach tennis because I just wanted to be a comic. I wanted to focus on comedy. But I got a call from a friend that knew me in the tennis world and said, hey, I can't teach this like A-list celebrity on Tuesday. Can you cover for me? You got to promise you won't steal her as a client.
Scarlett Johansson.
No. I can't tell you. I can't tell you what it is. Anyways. So
Scarlett Jo.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. So I'm like, sure. But my favorite part about this was the other coach was like, made me promise I wouldn't steal her client. And I'm like, that's God, so like I'm not going to do that. But thank you for the opportunity. So I teach this woman. It's at their private court. Their husband's a rock star, blah, blah, blah. She's a famous actress. She's getting ready to pay me. And this is why I love rich, famous people. She never even asked what it cost.
Right.
And also I never even thought about it. So she said, what do I pay you? And I'm like, what's the highest number that I can say? You know, so I said, this is for 1 hour. I said like $450 and she doesn't even blink. It's paid for. I look at the check. It's from their entertainment fund. So these two famous people, they just have a fund for this. Right. For the, and I'm just like, God damn it. I could have said 5,000.
Right.
I was like, don't fall into this LA trap. You'll be 10 years from now, you'll be doing this and you'll have nothing to show for yourself other than a bunch of money and a great Rolodex.
Yeah, just a bunch of towels at your house covered in spray tan juice. You know, that's about all you'd have.
Yeah, by the way, this has been so much fun, dude. Seriously. Jason, how are we doing on time?
We're doing good. We got to wrap it up, but.
Okay.
But dude, well, two things. One, I want to talk a little bit more about the get into the pieces, but you please come back. I'd love to talk to you a little bit more. And I'd actually like to dig into the tennis a little bit more. Cause,
sure.
That's where big fans.
I really appreciate it. And my special's out. I'm not sure when this airs, but it's out Friday, December 11th on Comedy Central. And it should be out online eventually. I'm really proud of it and I want people to watch it. I mean, can I get more of a desperate plea than that?
People should
watch it. No, we will desperately plea for you, but it is December 11th. Everybody that's listening to it now, that's Friday. Everybody else will hear it tomorrow in the podcast. So we'll get everybody there. I'm definitely going to tune in and your social is Michael Costa at Michael Costa.
Yeah, it's just at Michael Costa for everything. You can also just Google it and the Tennis Anyone podcast. If you're into tennis, you will love the podcast. If you're not in the tennis, you will like the podcast.
It's a win-win. It's a win-win.
That's kind of how we deal with it. We work with the Sklars and they do their sports show and it's one of those things. Yeah. Same thing.
Those guys right are great.
On. Michael, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate awesome, you. Thank Michael. You for taking some time to know how busy you are.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations on everything.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you later, Michael.
Yeah. What a good guy.
Oh, yeah. He's so great. He's so sweet. What a nice man.
I really like that guy.
And funny. I mean, you know,
really funny and pleasant and like just nice, normal, nice. Like, I guess that's that Midwestern nice.
Yeah, I guess it is. Right. It's like the no accent, you know, you can be from anywhere, get, you know, fit right in. And so sweet.
So everybody out there, while we're getting this all set up, I just want to let you know today is a very important day for me. Cyberpunk 2077 comes out, which is the only game I've been looking forward to this year, except for Tony Hawk. It just came out. And one of the things that I found out you can do in this game and I've been messing with all day is you can give yourself a dangle. It actually has the option to turn your penis on, off, small, big, floppy. There's a couple different versions of it, circed, uncircled, all whole bit, right? I get to do that. Or I can give myself a G. I can give myself a VJ, whatever I want.
This is real.
This is real. The only thing you cannot do is apply MeUndies to that pee. And that is why this game is only going to get a 95% from me, because it would get 100% if it would just get to the V.
I don't understand. Okay, so now are you going to take this and are you going to push it into MeUndies?
Oh, yeah, I'm just saying.
Because I'm trying to do this, I swear I am, and it keeps saying I've accepted the show. And then I click on the show, it goes, oops, unfortunately, that show is no longer available. And this is our fault, people. Stereo is actually incredibly easy to use. It's just me.
Well, I put a new one out there for you, 410. You got to accept the new one.
Yeah, but it's not showing me the new one. That's where the problem therein lies.
All right, here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to do.
It's always me, though. Guys, anyone who's listening, this is always me.
It is always you, but that's okay. It's always you. It's always you. It's always been you. Here, watch this. Watch this. Watch this. There you go.
You've always been the innkeeper. You've always been the caretaker. Oh, here it is.
All right. You're going to switch over. What do you do? What do you do?
I already did it.
All right. You all switched over?
Yeah.
All right. All right. You're going to turn yourself down just a little bit. Or you won't let me turn myself up. All right. We're live on the Stereo app. And at the same time, we're live out there and everybody. So what I was talking about, okay, Cyberpunk 2077, it gives you the option to add nipples, remove nipples, add a penis, remove a penis, add a vagina, put some pubic hair on there. It's the whole bit. It's like, this is the ultimate role-playing game. If you're in the future, 2077, you can have like a tattoo and an electronic thing installed into your body. And you can also give yourself a wang. And all I'm saying is a little DLC would be good. A little bit of that kind of in-game content would be a great way to go with this, right? Add MeUndies. Add MeUndies. It could be a downloadable pack. You could go to Stuck at Home, or you could go to MeUndies.com, offer code Stuck, and then you could have your undies, your real MeUndies, put into the game. That's all I'm going. That's what I'm asking for.
You can Project do that? CD-RED. Have your real MeUndies put in the game?
No, you can't. I'm just asking. This is what I'm saying. That's what I want. That's what I want to really add to the realism of this. I'd like P. We got the P. Now let's get the me in there. You know what I mean?
I do. I do. I actually am following you. And I will say, very clever, Jason. Very clever. Just like MeUndies. And by the way, I was wearing the loungewear pants last night, and I took them off, and my legs started screaming at me. They were so mad. Did
you? Well, yeah, you know. Off. Yeah. And then put them back
on.
It's
so comfortable. So I took it off, and then I decided that this is so comfortable, I'm going to have to buy these for a few people, just as like random stocking stuffer gifts. So I went online, and I did that.
And that's awesome.
And I bought some of the dog stuff too. I want my dogs in MeUndies.
Of course you did.
I do. I'm just saying, I want my dogs in MeUndies. I want everybody to buy presents. It's free shipping. Okay. This is all the micromodal, super comfortable. What'd you say? MeUndies.com, offer code Stuck.
Offer code Stuck. Get them, put that, get your me for your pee. All right. We got some news, and hopefully we'll get some comments and some questions, but I wanted to go over some things with you. Number one,
I'm right here.
All right. So a little news. So Alfred Molina, we know who Alfred Molina is, right?
Boogie Nights.
Very famous actor. He was at the, if you don't know him, he was at the beginning of the first Indiana Jones. Throw me the whip. No time to argue. Throw me the title. Yeah. But also he's been in a lot of stuff since then, including playing Doc Ock in the Spider-Man 2, the Sam Raimi. Well, it turns out that, Alfred Molina is going to reprise his role in the newest Spider-Man movie that'll be coming out Christmas 2021.
Are you excited? I was reading this. I did read a little about, and I thought of you immediately, obviously. Are you excited about this? The Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst and everyone's returning. Is this a big deal for you?
To a point it is, because it's potentially opening up for what is called the Spider-Verse, which is one of the more interesting kind of the last 10 years, stories of Spider-Man, where it's a lot more complicated than it was in that movie, that cartoon that they put out, the Spider-Man Spider-Verse movie, which it was about like vampires that lived off the spider essence, and it was a real kind of convoluted thing. But they figured out a way to really streamline it, and it brought in a lot of different Spider-Men from, you know, UK Spider-Man, Australian Spider-Man, Japanese Spider-Man, that from the noir era and all that stuff. So what they're going to try and do, I think, is try and tie in all the old movies with the new movie, bring in the old villains, maybe repurpose them and repackage them a little bit. So you got Kristen Dunst, you got Alfred Molina, you got Jamie Foxx coming back because he was in the second round of the second set of reboots. You've got You've got the one person I really could care less about is Toby. But he was that first Spider-Man.
I feel the exact same way about that. I have to say that very honestly. I feel like it was like he was the one guy who just he wasn't able to get another job, and they're like, "All right, we'll bring you back. It'll be like nostalgia." Because this guy, he's just a dud.
Well, the irony of it all is that he's the one that that is kind of like holding out.
Of course he is. It's always the guy who's the least important dude who's making the biggest racket. You know, right. I can't tell you how many deals I've been involved in, and I'm going to say more than two, where they were, you know, sold deals. And the lowest guy, the person with the least credits or no credits or anything is the one who blows the whole deal up.
Right, right. And that's exactly what he's doing right now.
Listen, let me tell you a little story about Toby. You want to know a little story?
Yeah, I will. Yeah, let's hear a story.
I'm going to make it very good. I'm not going to use any names other than Toby. I'm with a guy who's a very big guy. Well, he's a medium guy in the industry. At the time, he was bigger. And Toby wanted to meet with this guy about something. And it was wherever we were at one of these mall outside places. And we walk over, and he has no idea who I am. And he doesn't even look at me. He doesn't address me. He didn't think I existed. He was like, "I'm talking to this guy. You're obviously not someone I need to even introduce myself to." And I said, "Okay, cool." I didn't say a word, but it was like kind of duly noted. And then I realized everything else I've heard all these years. I'm like, this is where this comes from. That's not the way a normal person behaves.
Right.
If you walk up with someone and I go, "Hey, how you doing? I'm Cliff." "Hey, how you doing? I'm Cliff." No, right. That's all I got. Right. But I'm saying, so with that type of behavior, if you tell me that he's the guy who's making the holdout, I'm like, yeah, okay. That's obviously the guy who's making the holdout. Yeah.
It's funny because he always felt to me like there's a couple movies I actually really enjoyed him in. I enjoyed him in Wonder Boys and a couple others. But in general, I always thought he was not, you know, he's kind of he always struck me as kind of the nerdy one, but he got somehow invited into Leo's pussy party, or what is it? Pussy Posse.
What did they do? They just did it on America. What is it? Family Guy. So they just did it. What was it? Oh, Big Mouth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Pussy Posse kind of thing.
Well, they called it Pussy Posse, but we at Entourage really named the Pussy Posse. It was the first time anyone used Pussy Posse. It was season two at Comic-Con.
Oh, okay.
Just saying. And that was the Pussy Posse. Yeah. And we got, Jesse Jane.
Oh, that's right.
Was the head of the Pussy Posse.
So, okay.
A good year.
So, but that's what I kind of mean with this. Like, he never felt like the guy that had the right to be that way. He was the guy that you'd think that would needed to be a little bit better actor than everyone else, a little bit more nice, yeah. You know?
Yes. Yeah, you can either be fat and nice or skinny, good-looking, and a bitch. You can't be fat and a bitch. You're not going to have any friends. Yeah. It's just not going to work, man. You got to figure one out or the other. And this guy's like being fat and bitchy. It's not okay. And again, you know, how blessed are you, man? You got all this property, you live in your life, you skated out of the poker thing that you obviously did something there. And now you're getting to go do Spider-Man again when no one's seen you on a screen in anything that matters in the last 10 years. And you're giving, you have Michigas going on. You want to make it a big deal. Yeah. It's bizarre to me. You're so lucky. All of it. Everyone. Anyone involved in that is lucky. I'm not saying you're not talented, but you're also lucky. That's all I'm saying. Okay, so that being said, I will say goodbye to everyone on Facebook, and we will have this all worked out on Friday, everyone. Thank you for tuning in and putting up with it. And, it's not a big deal. Once in a while, it's not me. So this time, I feel kind of good about that. I'm going to enjoy that. So stay safe, stay sane, stay strong. What?
Stay strong. What?
Nope, you're fine. Bye-bye.
Okay, we'll see you Friday.